Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another weekly evening installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight we're going to discuss a most interesting aspect of law. My name is Michael Edward, and I am your moderator and host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it would be very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear in this call tonight may in any way, shape, or form be deemed by you to be legal advice, financial advice, even advice for the loved one. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I ask you very politely and most sincerely, you hang up on this phone. Just disconnect from the call. Now, I don't mean to sound rude when I say this. I just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this conference call for legal advice has no place or business being here on any of these calls. No one here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or a member of the state bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer legal advice. Should you require legal advice, it's my suggestion to you, not advice, to get an attorney, someone your state sanctions to give advice in law. As to these calls, they're just for entertainment purposes only. Just people saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you and your particular situation. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to find folks' opinions on what they might do were they similarly situated, nothing more. Now, no matter how educated or experienced these people are that are sharing their thoughts and opinions might be, they're just people's opinions nonetheless. It's always up to you to do your own due diligence. On a side note, some of these people have graduated law school, they've taken the bar exam in their state, and then after having passed the bar exam, simply said to those offering a membership in that state bar, thank you, but no thank you. All right, let's go to the next subject. Let's go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law very quickly. First of all, I'll take everyone to the homepage of http://www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. Look in the upper right-hand corner where you'll see a tiny picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and a separate screen will pop up with just two items on it. These two items are certainly most important to you, though especially if this is all new to you. First and foremost and importantly, on the left is a jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known as American Jurisprudence, or AMJUR. Rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or the structure upon which all of American law operates through. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means that you have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you may find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, nationally known for its high success win rate in traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what's most it's popularly acquired for. This is not really why it's on the page, though. The reason we have a common law default process here with the jurisdictionary course is that when you go through this course, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedure you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it acts as a kind of real-life homework assignment. And also for a lot of folks, it's the first time they are committing to action on their own. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, possibly because of such a high success rate in traffic scenarios being such a common problem in this country today. The common law default process, although known for its traffic purposes, has many other remedy applications for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there is no damage to property or person. It's just some government official claiming you broke a rule. Malum prohibita is what this is called. And so, because you broke the rule, you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very reasonably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and a common law default process with a contribution of $150. While we're on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, you're probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage, yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the sites you are visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America for a while. And the reason that we're doing this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. YourRemediesInTheLaw.com is just one of the couple dozen websites that altogether comprised under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see there, and we hope that you will do just that at your leisure. Should you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal, educated, informed opinion about your particular situation, simply email me at mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com or call 1-800-625-4250, and we'll be happy to assist you any way we are able. Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's the map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communication platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topic of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. It's actually a very easy setup to begin with when you apply to become a member. You know, continue here, click next, so forth, put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. And then the assistant will walk you through the remainder of the setup. You will then get to a point where it will ask you what your interests are. What are you interested in? This could range anywhere from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, maybe even veterans' rights, personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And that is if it affects your personal life in one way or another. You can find it in this list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, the software puts this all together, much like you would think of a social network. Not that it's a social network. It's very custom, very private. It then puts you in contact with people in your local venue that have these common interests to you. People you most likely would never have met otherwise. You found them. They found you simply because you're both members of Americans Restoring America. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back into the hands of the common man. Imagine were you to go into a county council meeting alone now with your newfound friends who agree with you on a particular standing on an issue. Well, they now show up with you. And it's not just, you know, you and three or four or five other buds. It's now people in the number of the tens or the hundreds, and in some instances even in the thousands, and it's easily accomplished. If you're in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's that simple. But if there was a way, a private way that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, well, you know, you jump online one day and you say, well, this happened to me today. The first person responds and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. That's probably not going to be a tremendous help to you. The next person chimes in and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situation. I would watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down to my local courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person following that chimes in and says, well, those all sound like great ideas. And also, there's this particular website you should check out, these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then you go and do some due diligence on what you're reading. It's just people offering suggestions, people's opinions. But if you just do your own due diligence and educate yourself, maybe the further you get down the road, well, you'll discover that it's not all that difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject and you get to the point where you've investigated the matter yourself and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all what we're trying to do here at Grassfire Communications. It becomes very simple to get people to start talking again amongst themselves. Of course, there's no cost for you to use Grassfire Communications, either signing up or the regular use of it. and so we're hopeful you'll pass this information on to others. If that's not an option for you today, well, there's always Freedoms Radio, freedomsradio.com. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the card process, your remedy is in the law, and you don't have the username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and PIN number to jump up on the calls. By the way, if you want to pick up a membership to yourremediesinthelaw.com, it's very simple. You simply click the register button. And so that's your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first of 30 days for free evaluating it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your bank card or your PayPal. And it will not ask you for your bank card number, PayPal information until the month has expired. Did you know that every single call that we do on every of these nightly calls are recorded? There are years of archives to go through. There's a vast wealth of knowledge there as well as other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and they're live. Now, if for some reason we're not able to attend the call that night, you know, illness, whatever, the guest speaker is unable to make that call, then we'll have a recording, and that recording will be something that was recorded on that day a year ago. And it's, you know, time has passed. It's probably good to listen to that again if you hadn't heard it the first time. There's also the question box there where you can type in a question at Freedoms Radio. Click submit as long as it's within certain call hours. Your written question will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our very best to read every single one of those questions out over the years as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get to talk directly with the information provider like you would by being on a private member, but you are there on Freedoms Radio, and you are able to communicate by way of the moderator giving voice to your comment or your question. So there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio. So no matter where you are or what your circumstances are, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down from here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, your buyer beware. Your remedies in the law is under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. When you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you're doing just that. Information providers pay for advertising at Your Remedies in the Law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider, along with many other expenses that might be associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we do is to listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduced from a list of folks that honestly most of you would never be able to find on your own, simply because they can't be found, unless, of course, you're one of those alphabet agencies that work in the government circles. And then we make these introductions. Not all teaching efforts by the information providers are always going to be successful. Everyone always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. Unfortunately, bad things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to wrestle with them and deal with them as you would anything else in your life. Again, we also want to emphasize the intent. The intent is always to be successful. Every step taken is to end with a successful conclusion. If you have any questions about that, we welcome you to visit http://www.yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials. And see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now let's touch very quickly on the subjects of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not at Your Remedies in the Law anyways, of course. When you call in and you go with a particular information provider, that's exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. There must be extreme and extenuating circumstances. You're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining to here to all the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we need to remind everyone that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that the speaker has to say, well, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we all learn, you know, point, counterpoint. But please, your call must always be civil. The question you pose, if posed properly and then answered properly, well, then we all can learn something from it. All right, now, well, that's my rant for this evening. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to the speaker this evening, who is going to have a very, very interesting discussion. You have heard prosecutorial immunity, judicial immunity. This is what bad actors claim, that they can get away with it. They're immune from prosecution. I like to add the precursor to that of saying alleged prosecutorial immunity. Anyways, so without further ado, it is my sincere pleasure to bring forward Brother John and share with him, ask him to share with us, rather, his comments on that good subject. John, you there?
Yes, Michael, Brother thank John. You for that.
There
very,
you go.
Yeah, thank you for that very kind and gracious introduction there. Thank you. Judiciary and prosecutors are human, just like we are. They can make mistakes just like we do. And to that end, it's very important that we consider that someone that's in the public trust may from time to time make mistakes. And they're allowed to make a genuine, like they made an error, they overlooked something. And there's a mechanism for correcting that. There are some times when the judge ruled in one way and didn't know better and ruled in opposite to what would be legal and lawful and constitutional, or if you must go back to the civil code and rule per the code. But what happens when sometimes you get a judge that knows that they're rule, or a prosecutor that knows they're wrong, and the abomination of all abominations. I sat in the courtroom one time when a judge had told the plaintiff in a case, "Look, you're going to do this my way. Your life is in my hand. I can take away your liberty. I can take away your life. I can take away your house, your children, and there's not a explicative deleted thing you can do about it." And what happens is that we find that there are some prosecutors that, for example, they cannot, you know, they say that they cannot be sued for knowingly prosecuting an innocent person, withholding evidence or of innocence, or even fabricating a false evidence against them. And they say that there's an absolute shield against any prosecution. Well, that's not true. There is some immunity in case the judiciary overlooked something and that they didn't see. And but if they're offering evidence that they know is false or inadmissible, or encouraging witnesses to lie on the stand, keeping exculpatory evidence that could clear the defendant of the charges hidden from the defense, or using improper arguments, this is all coloring outside the lines. And there's a lot of judiciary that claim that they've got complete prosecutorial immunity, and they don't even they refuse to accept constructive criticisms, or even in certain cases their counterparts will dismiss suits against them when a suit is brought against them for criminal activity. The preamble to the Constitution of the United States says, "We the people, establishes Constitution for the United States of America. And Abraham Lincoln was not far from the words of our forefathers in the Declaration of Independence when he reiterates and states the Gettysburg Address in the last line of his address on November 19, 1863, the words, that the government of the people, by the people, and for the people, thus indicating that the people are the highest position of authority in the government of the United States of America. That would also indicate that stating that the office of the President of the United States, that all these individuals that hold any office of any type would be a public servant and therefore work for the people. The ability of the people to address and redress civil and criminal concerns of the day are removed by when they are removed by policy and rules that constitute deviation from the intent of the process of justice to an abnormal desire for adherence to a form of local rule, then one is compelled to question the validity or the value of the rule. Hang on a second, I'm going to grab myself something to drink. In this condition, if this condition deprives the individual of justice because the rule reference incapacitates the pleadings from fully conveying or addressing the issues of the matter for consideration or being weighed, then further contemplation is now required. And if a justice no longer has the capacity to serve in this matter because of this forced incapacity, then one is compelled to ponder the statute of 18 U.S.C. 242, deprivation of civil rights under color of law or rule. Deprivation of rights. I used the term civil there. That was an error on my part. These are not civil rights. These are just rights. And they're required, it causes one to reevaluate the potential criminal nature of the acts, so constituting this incapacity and his subsequent preemptive subversion of justice. Furthermore, one must also contemplate whether an act like this could have been intentional or an act of ignorance of an overzealous attempt at properly serving the people of the United States in an unintentional act of subverting justice. From time to time, we find judges and prosecutors running for office and making election campaign statements like, I have had this many convictions, or my conviction rate is better than a certain percentage, rather than a better stating that I've seen justice serve in over 90% of my cases. The branch of the judiciary of the United States of America clearly exists to serve the people because the people are the government. Therefore, the judiciary would automatically have a fiduciary responsibility to serve the people, as would the prosecutors to serve the people, their employer, and to carry out justice. A prosecutor has no different of a fiduciary responsibility than the judiciary. They both work for you. Justice in the courtroom is not a competition or challenge between individuals or plaintiffs versus defendants or petitioners versus respondents or prosecutors versus defendant. The challenge is between justice and injustice, between right and wrong. Everyone fights together on the same side for justice. The judiciary and the prosecutors are to be respected and applauded for successfully seeing justice in a case, not for winning. To that end, if the prosecutor or the judge in a case is aware of a defect in the case or pleading that could result in a failure of justice, in fulfillment of their fiduciary responsibility, it is both their responsibility to alert the parties present and the people that they serve and correct the defect immediately so that justice might be served. And it is a clear violation of that fiduciary responsibility if either the judge or the prosecutor chooses to overlook notifying the parties present of the defect. The public trust of the office of the prosecutor and the office of the court is the single most important of an individual's service to either the prosecutor's office or the office of the judiciary in service to the people. And if this character of the trust in either of those offices should be tarnished or damaged or besmirched, it is logical to consider that the trust lost in an individual can no longer hope that they can service justice in the aforementioned consideration of either the jurist or the prosecutor, or that the justice has become the whim of the office, meaning in the most serious condition, then a most serious condition exists. This was in most cases specific. This would be most specific in cases where high monetary penalties, long-term detention, or capital punishment could apply. If both officers are in good standing in the mind's eye of the charge, then accepting the related penalty is usually acceptable to most individuals. However, if the office of the prosecutor or the judiciary has been tarnished and this crucial trust has been lost, now, in a worst-case scenario, history has shown that many individuals would attempt to terminate what they considered a potential threat to their liberty or life's blood rather than face a potential injustice, believing that if justice is already lost, so taking the life of either the prosecutor or the judiciary is now for free in their own mind, as it were. So, protecting the reputation of the public trust of both the judiciary and the prosecutor's office is critically prime importance that there is no criminal color of activity occurring in either office of the judiciary or the prosecutor, and that this must be foremost in our minds. And to that end, there is no room for unkindness, malice, disrespect, corruption, prejudice, favorsin, exceeding one's authority, or allowance for unlawful activity, tampering with witnesses, tampering with jurors, or failure to seek justice honestly, or a host of other similar issues. In fact, all of these are prohibited by Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution of the United States, and to such any or the aforementioned activities are grounds for immediate removal from office, to wit, the judges of both the Supreme and Inferior Courts shall hold their offices during time of good behavior, meaning that failure of good behavior is grounds for immediate removal from office. And when the removal from office is slow, the tarnish on the office grows very quickly, and the public trust fades very quickly. The Constitution-required oath of office is extremely important. Just as a candidate for President of the United States is required to swear an oath of office before he may serve as president, as described in Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution for the United States of America, so all senators, representatives, the members of the state legislatures, and all executive judicial officers of both the United States and the several states shall be bound by an oath of affirmation to support the Constitution, for they may hold office. That's a quote, unquote. Therefore, if this oath has been violated, whether the individual has been impeached or not, they are no longer able to exercise the authority, rights, or privileges, and the amenities of the office any longer. Section 2, Article 4 of the Constitution for the United States specifically states, the President, Vice President, and civil officers of the United States shall remove from office on impeachment for conviction of treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors. The aforementioned statement indicate that a criminal trial may or can precede any impeachment proceedings. In a case recently that I reviewed or that I pled in back in July of 2020, the defendant asserted that a member of the judiciary and a federal prosecutor complained of by the plaintiffs are exempt from prosecution for decisions they made while in their office. And to that extent, the judiciary, quote-unquote, oath of office, remains intact and are in good standing and good behavior. However, the judiciary and the prosecutors both, although they had such immunity, they did not maintain their good behavior oath of office, and they were not intact when this immunity no longer applied. Paraphrased, Any judgment or act committed while coloring between the lines is protected, but any judgment or act committed while coloring outside the lines is not protected and is illegal and must be prosecuted accordingly. Defendant's intent is clearly to have the plaintiffs remove the complaint against individuals in that case that I was working on. And in this particular case, the defendant was a judge. And the district court judge, a federal prosecutor, actually two federal prosecutors, these judges were kind of banding together to protect them and claiming that judicial and prosecutorial immunity applied unconditionally and was unqualified. And they restated in pleadings when we filed the brief in support of the removal of the judge. The first, when another gentleman filed the first brief or complaint against the judge, they says, no, we have unqualified judicial and prosecutorial immunity. Now, what happened was is that when we forcefully stated with emphasis added that a member of the judiciary prosecutors, they said, do you mean that you can violate the highest law of the land and an individual's constitutional rights without consequence or recourse in all in controversy to the Constitution of the United States of America? And judiciary and the prosecutors further threatened to summarily dismiss this individual's case and the allegations. Well, we went back and we explained everything on that particular case down to the NAT side. And what happened was is that when they realized that the judiciary and the prosecutors did not have complete unqualified immunity, the one judge that we were dealing with, I heard that she attempted to resign before the Chief Justice at that particular U.S. District Court in Florida asked her to step down from the case and recuse herself. And within 9 days, she had taken an alternate retirement, Plan B, an early out, and she moved to a non-extradition country. We pointed out that they were all and showed in every case that the decisions that this particular judiciary was making and the prosecutor were all illegal and therefore criminal acts and not covered by judicial or prosecutorial immunity. When you have a character-building exercise like this with the judiciary or a prosecutor, these are the steps that you're going to need to do to get some direction. This judge did not wait around, that she had violated her oath of office, and because without her oath of office being intact, they cannot exercise the authority or privileges, responsibilities, or amenities of office. The alleged acts in question were made very clear to this particular judge and also to the individuals that were related and that were overseeing her position in office, and that they constituted an immediate loss of the immunities that a jurist or a prosecutor would enjoy when their duties are carried out when they hold office during times of good behavior, going back to Section 1, Article 3 of the Constitution, United States of America, for their oath of office being still intact, and Article 3, Section 1, Paragraph 2 of the Line 2 of the Constitution. And while their oath of office is still intact, as it were, they're allowed to continue to execute the immunities and responsibilities and privileges and authorities of office. But when that oath of office is not intact, they are not allowed to execute the authority, privileges, responsibilities, or amenities of office. Furthermore, it can be shown that with very little investigation that a pattern of behavior was established in each one of these judiciary and the prosecutors. Usually when somebody comes in this arrogant and they're that bad and violating those oaths of office, these are not isolated incidents. The general character of an individual like this in this office, especially when they come, you know, they've been in the office for more than a couple of days or weeks, you know, they've been in it for a couple of years, the pattern of behavior can be found in the other cases. What we did was we went back and found the pattern of behavior and filed a suit. At this juncture, it was in the form of 1942 U.S.C. 1983 against this judiciary. And we pointed out that there were other judiciary in the same district that Chief Justice quietly asked for them to recuse themselves from their cases, and we later found out that two of the three had not only resigned but moved to non-extradition countries, and they had done it within weeks, literally, after the suit was filed. One of the ways that this turned up was that we got no response from the judge that we had filed the suit against. She was no longer not just in town, but not just in the country, and had no intention of responding. And the Chief Justice in this case was also fairly corrupt and just summarily dismissed the case against the judge that had left town. And what we found out was that at the tax assessor collector's office in this county, that her property had been sold. When we looked up her DMV, all of her vehicles had been sold all within 4 days of each other. You know, so, and when the scuttlebutt came about that she had moved offshore and lived in a non-extradition country, that was not hard for us to believe. The when a prosecutor or a jurist has characteristic behavior, after careful examination, one finds out that the individual's oath of office is not intact, and the behavior being complained that somebody might complain of would easily disqualify them from services, from offices, from the capacities from which they asked it, and their and any contributions to the case in question are now null and void. And this is and what has happening was that four other people, four law firms immediately jumped on the bandwagon on this one, and immediately sought to have their cases overturned. That three of the cases that these four separate law firms had filed for had already gone up to the appellate level, and at one juncture, one had already gone to the Supreme Court, and they got it overturned because the jurist, both the jurist and the prosecutor's oath of office was null and void long before their case was ever heard. And this fell into the category of new information has come to light, and the and was grounds for a review of the case. And one thing you need to remember is that all these pleadings are a matter of public record, or most of them. Some are sealed. But when it comes to the attention of the public, the assertions that these jurists and these prosecutors make, and the disparagement of the public's trust in both the Office of the Federal Judiciary and the Office of the Federal Prosecutors, that the related reputations are so severely damaged, possibly beyond recovery, that what happens to the individual that's about to have a very serious case heard in these courts, and I listened to on a Zoom call during the COVID-19 thing. I listened to a defendant emphatically state without reservation and unequivocally, look, you're breaking the law and you say that you can just sweep my life away and take away my constitutional rights. What is my reason for honoring you or even listening to you hear my case? Is it versus paying somebody, you know, a few dollars just to erase your, and he used the word ass in court. The bailiff was on top of the person immediately. They re-handcuffed him and they chained him up and everything else. But he said that in court. And the judge in this case was also a lady. She stepped off the court, off the bench, recused herself from the case, and never came back. She was appointed by the governor of that state 3 years earlier and had not, and was coming up for re-election in another 4 months. She did not come back to that case. She realized how serious what she said, and she was very arrogant. Usually the men are, you know, us men, we have typical macho American male egos, a four-lane freeway wide, and, you know, our egos are so big that they write checks most of our butts can't cash. You know, and we've usually got the ration of attitude is overweening the out of control and overwhelming. But I'll tell you this. There are a few women out there that have the same, that, you know, I don't know if it's as bad as our egos, but they do have them. And so what happens is that I've written multiple pleadings in individuals who are judges, were coloring outside the line, or the prosecutors were coloring outside the line. And some of what you heard earlier was literally written from that pleading that was filed in Florida at the U.S. District Court there. Some of it is literally quoted from the pleading that I wrote. And I wrote those very words. And there's a handful of others that I have written. Here's what happens. If we can do it tactfully so that we can educate both the jurist and the prosecutor that the behavior is wrong, then there's a good chance that you can walk out of that courtroom with a complete different judgment than you would have otherwise received. It's very, very important that even though the behavior has gone south and become very poor. Hold on a second, I'm going to get myself something to drink. Thank you for your patience. That if you can put in writing, and I say put in writing, I've tried to address some of these issues in court. And sometimes one line or the next line, even when I have a prepared statement and I'm reading for something that I've already written down, you know, somebody will object to this line or that line and you get cut off. But when it's put into a pleading, everything is right there. And while they may object to not just one or two of the statements you make or the lines in there, they may object to half of them. The other half are still there. And it still weighs on them and their counterpart, whether it's the jurist or the prosecutor. It is exceedingly important that when you're preparing a statement such as this and you realize that you've got an issue of judicial impropriety or prosecutorial impropriety, that you learn how to cover it and communicate it very tactfully with the code or the law or the Constitution that states emphatically in black and white what they're doing wrong. I was in a and this one I was appearing remotely, and it was during CV-19. The judge says, quoted that a Supreme Court ruling that both the judiciary and the prosecutors had unequivocal immunity. And I raised my hand on the Zoom call, and this gentleman happened to be the Chief Justice for this particular one of the 93 U.S. District Courts that there are in the United States. And he asked me what my question was, and I quoted the Constitution exclusively, and he says, you have a point there. He says, maybe I was wrong. He says, the prosecutor objected, and he asked why the prosecutor objected. He says, well, we do have prosecutorial immunity. The Supreme Court ruled on this date, the court, and you know some of the Supreme Court cites on that. He goes, no, the Supreme, and he told the prosecutor, who was also a man in this case, he says, he just made a point that the Supreme Court can't usurp the Constitution. So those judgments, as he reminded us under Marbury versus Madison, are null and void. And so would the prosecutor's office like to reconsider their case? And the prosecutor, he objected vehemently, and his assistant, who doesn't have the right to object, actually stood up and said, object, object, Your Honor. And the judge did a 21-day continuance to allow them to restate their case and reformulate their case. The situation was very, very serious. When they came back, all they said was, the government moves to dismiss, Your Honor, on all counts. That was all they said. They didn't even try to prosecute the case. I've been in a couple of situations. One of them was 5 years ago, or 6 years ago. Actually, it's almost seven now. It's 2017. That I was in. It was in a U.S. District Court in Florida. Actually, in the Pensacola Court there, and the case is still under appeal. And that one, I was not able to make the case clean enough and make the pleadings clear enough. I've since learned a little bit more, but that case is preparing to go up to SCOTUS right now. It's been waiting for 2.5 years to go up to SCOTUS. For those of you who don't know what SCOTUS is, S-C-O-T-U-S, Supreme Court of the United States, S-C-O-T-U-S. It's been on the docket for, actually, now that I think about it, it's almost 2.5 years waiting to go to SCOTUS. Sometimes you can win a judiciary over or a prosecutor over. Sometimes you can't. It's very, very important to remember that if you, there's an old saying, when somebody takes you to suit, settle on your way to court, lest they hand you over to the magistrate and the magistrate hand you over to the jailer and you don't get released until every penny is paid. Settling out of court is a very, very, very good thing. The moment you get into court, personal issues come to play, including whether I got a good night's sleep last night and I got a bad attitude this morning, because when I got out of bed, the cat was sitting there curled up right where I stand up, and I stood on the cat and it scratched the stuffing out of me, and I've had a bad way, and getting up on the wrong side of the bed doesn't describe it. All those potential problematic issues follow you. It's best to try to resolve all of your matters before you go to court. Some of the students that Michael's talked about that we've worked with, we worked with them to get them taken care of out of court. And in one particular case, shock of all shocks, the pleading that, you know, we worked with the student to write got dismissed before he was ever officially arraigned and charged. Okay. And they had multiple felony grand jury indictments against this individual. And there was a very nice letter from the prosecutor saying, in the interest of justice, we're dismissing all charges. That came 2.5 or 3 weeks after the check for the bail came, you know, and was returned to them, you know. And so it's understanding that a lot of these people are trying to do the best job they can, the best way they know how, and they may make some mistakes is one thing. Finding prosecutors that just have a bad attitude and their intention, they don't care on any specific topic. And the topic could be shoplifters. It could be people who violate the speed limit in a school zone. You know, it could be drunk drivers. You know, maybe one of their family members was killed by a drunk driver. And anybody that comes in with a blood O2 level of excessive 0.1, they don't care because that's what this person that killed their family member was. You've got all of these things to deal with. So when you find that, a judiciary or a prosecutor that is potentially challenged and has a bad attitude, figure out how to resolve this out of court immediately. When a little bit of the excess baggage that they may have, that they may be carrying in their backpack, which may be just nothing more than a pack of rocks, but the weight of that is just bearing down on them and they're having problems. You need to understand that no matter what happens, when they come in, you're going to be dealing with that. It's extremely important that also it's hard to get prosecutors prosecuted, because what happens is that you, to get a DAG, you know, Deputy Attorney General prosecuted, or even a local prosecutor, they you're going to find that there has to be another prosecutor prosecuting him, which means that all those 5 years or 17 years or 29 years that they've been coming into the same office, come through the same door, sit down at a desk across from each other, and been working together, sometimes on the same cases, and maybe even they go to each other's children's plays at school, and they even maybe go out and get something, a little social libation after work on the same day, every day of the week. All of that, they have to throw all that away to prosecute their fellow person. So know that if you get a bad egg, it's going to be an uphill all the way. It's not impossible. There's individuals on this call that their particular case, they've said, Brother John, you know, you talked about that prosecuting somebody civilly is easier than criminally, but I want them to go down for criminal, and I'm willing to bite the bullet and go the whole load on it. And it is an honor and a privilege to stand beside some of the individuals on this call to serve Lady Liberty and to, you know, to restoring liberty to America. This individual wasn't going to worry about the workload that's going with the battle. They were just concerned about doing it right and getting the battle and sending a statement to everyone else that's corrupt. And I believe I believe that some of the people that are on this call that right now, that you are the methods and the means by with which God will bring liberty back to this country. And it's people like them with the temerity of character that are willing to stand up and fight for what they believe, in spite of how much fun they may really be having. It's that type of character that it takes to be able to stand up in court and say, Your Honor, I'm not dismissing. This is wrong, and this is what we're doing. And this one individual said, John, when do we get together to swear out the affidavits for the grand jury indictments? You know, and knowing full well that it's going to take some work, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be an uphill battle all the way. When we're dealing with prosecutorial misconduct, it's very, very important that you remember what the most critical examples of prosecutorial misconduct are. Offering evidence that they know to be false or inadmissible, including encouraging witnesses to lie on the stand. Keeping exculpatory evidence that could clear the defendant from the charges hidden from the defense, and using improper arguments. And there's some books that are available from Amazon that are very good, I recommend, it's really just absolutely excellent when you can get prepared in advance. There's a couple of small books, and we've talked about them before, on Amazon. There's a place where you can get three of them very, very easily that I recommend. But one of them is making and meeting objections in court. And it's very, very, very helpful. And it's something that I unequivocally recommend. And it's actually the second one by Judge Robert Wenke, Making and Meeting Objections 2. And then there's Understanding Trial Objections by Ryan Steiger. Those are very, very, very good books to read. And I think you can get both of those for like less than $60. And if you're going to get those, there's a little pocket paperback version of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. It's about $2. And I buy them regularly. I buy a couple dozen at a time, you know, is my smallest order. But for those of you who are actual, genuine jurisprudence, there's a Bouvier's Law Dictionary. It's like Black's Law, but this is Bouvier's Law. There's volume 1 and 2, and they're both about $25. Those five books, Bouvier's 1 and 2, Law Dictionary, the Constitution, which I think is about $2 or $3 last time I bought it, and then the Making and Meeting Objections by Judge Robert Wenke. It's a little pocketbook. Very nice. And Understanding Trial Objections, it's a small paperback by Ryan Steiger. Those will help you if you end up in a court situation. Now, getting to a situation around the prosecutor, when you sometimes cross-examining or getting a deposition without the prosecutor's objections there, is very, very good. It's a kind of an expensive book, but it's Winning at Depositions. And that's like a $70 or $90 book. And I'd recommend, you know, you can get testimony and evidence into the record under less adversarial situations, and it can do you a lot of good, especially when you're dealing with an adversarial prosecutor or a justice, because you say, hey, look, I've got the testimony right here, you know, because they'll try to tear apart your witness on the stand. So So those actually those six books, very, very good. If you didn't get them and you need to, ask us after the call. I'll review those. But with that, my time has come to a close. We're going to open it up for question and answer now. You're not required to adhere to the subject matter topic of the evening on the closing Q&As. If you're able to, it's very helpful and very pleasant. But if you're not, so be it. And with that, I'm back to Michael Edwards. Thank you, Michael.
Well, thank you so very much, sir. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hands. Press star 2 on your keypad. For those of you listening by way of Freedom's Radio, you'll see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click inside of that rectangle and type away your comment or question. Underneath that rectangle silhouette, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information, then hit submit. When you hit submit, your comment or question pops up on my end, and I give voice to that for you, and then Brother John will reply. I also want to take a moment while you're thinking about doing what? Pressing star 2 on your keypad. Yep, that's it. That we have with us tonight, Johnny Ringo has graced us with his presence. We're pleased to have him here. I'm going to unmute his line real quick just to say hello and let John and Johnny talk for a second while you're considering pressing star 2 on your keypad.
Welcome, Johnny Ringo.
Hello there. Hey, John.
Hey, Hawaii. How are you, my honored brother?
Doing pretty good. We had a little trouble with the federal government on my compound here, and they ended up losing a few vehicles, and they were rather disgruntled about that. But I got a couple questions for you.
Yes, minor brother.
Or I got rather a warning for you. If you ever go to court and you tell that the article that you wrote in prior in this program, and you tell them that the prosecutor is working for him, I would duck real quick.
Say that again.
OIU says that the prosecutor is working for the people, and any defendant is considered the people. So if you go up and you tell them that the prosecutor is working for him, I think it would be detrimental to your health at the time.
You know, I've had a couple of prosecutors look at me very crossly, and, you know, but What I did was I just read, you know, this is government of the people, by the people, for the people, and I read the preamble, or, you know, the first paragraph to the Declaration of Independence there, where, you know, it says, by the consent of the government, you know, and I always said, Your Honor, and my honored prosecutors, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but does that mean that you guys are servants of the people and that the people are the highest one? And that's usually the way I pose it. And I just scratch my head and I say, what are your guys' thoughts? Does that mean you're servants of the people? Is that what the highest law of the land is stating? You know, what are your thoughts? And I ask, so far, the knives out of their eyes hasn't quite got to me yet.
I was going to say, it's a rather dangerous territory to explore in.
Oh, I never tell them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, I never tell them that. I always ask the question. Go ahead.
Have you ever presented it to them? You had a phrase that says the question of the validity of the rule. Have you ever presented that to any case?
There are times, Johnny Ringo, that I've scratched, most of the time, I've been in a wheelchair for the last so many years, and a lot of times when I'm in, you know, I'm on a Zoom call or something, but you know, some guy, some dusty old fart in a wheelchair in a courtroom, you know, it's almost like playing the helpless widow card. You know, that doesn't go over real good when the guy scratches his head and says, you know, you guys, I have a question here. You know, we've got a rule here, does that deprive the individual of their rights under color of law, or am I mistaken? You know, and I've asked that, you know, and I've asked, would that constitute a felony for us to try to enforce that rule, or are we going to get on scary ground there? Could somebody's oath of office be potentially threatened? And on one of them, I did say, you know, after I said, could that threaten somebody's oath of office, their 22 years, 8 months, 3 weeks, and 1 day of tenure, you know, and the judge stood up, leaned over, you know, and slapped his gavel 3 or 4 times. He says, who are you talking about? I says, oh, no, I'm just speaking metaphorically. He says, how do you know I had that much tenure? I says, whose tenure? And I says, but, you know, Your Honor, I was asking, could this be a potential risk of a violation of their oath of office, which could, if somebody looked into history, backed into, you know, and I recounted 8 cases, you know, and I still remember one of them, you know, Weiler versus Smith. I says that, you know, that could indicate that an individual's oath of office was broken over 20 years ago, you know, and he looked at me. I'm just asking the question, Your Honor, and the bailiff was already standing up and unsnapped his little shocky, stingy, shoot the little darts at you and, you know, tickle and short the wires out to you, you know, thingy. And the judge says, you know what, we may have to relook at applying that particular rule in this case. And I just said, just a question, you know, I'm just asking the prosecutors and the, and, you know, I suppose you could say I was approaching this amicus curiae. And the judge says, amicus curiae, you know, and I look straight at him. I says, well, I need for you to have your oath in office intact to finish this case, you know, so that justice might be served. And if something happened and was to arise and your oath of office was no longer intact, then that would mean that you might be removed or even potentially criminally prosecuted. I can't ask that, and the defendant here cannot risk that. You know, we need you to serve justice, Your Honor, please. And the judge, he dropped his gavel, and he sat down, and he had the most stunned look on his face. He says, we're going to recess for 10 minutes. When he came back, he says, in this particular case, he says, we're not going to apply either of those rules in this case. And he says, correct me if I'm wrong. And there were two lady prosecutors, two deputy attorney generals that were female. And says, because they could also prosecute you for deprivation of rights under color of law. And, you know, you and I both know the issue about Title 18, but sometimes I still unsnap my holster and pull that one. Keep going,
was
Johnny.
That in the state, was that in state or federal court?
That was U.S. District Court.
Okay. Okay. Because, on your oath of office there, there's they have to have an affidavit by 5 U.S.C. 331. An oath of office, 28 U.S.C. 544, and an appointment letter. And that applies to both state and federal judges and
right.
Also prosecutors. So it's rather interesting. One other question. You think the people or the populace trust the judicial system or the government at the present time? Your own personal opinion.
I'm sad to say that based on the letter writing campaign that occurred in a Florida district court after a case that we pled about 6-7 years ago, you would kind of scratch your head and wonder if the people still have the trust in the judiciary or the prosecution, office of the prosecutor.
Okay. Yeah, I was just
wondering. It's good to hear your voice.
No, I usually present problems.
Yeah, it's so good to hear your voice, brother. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you. You take care.
For those of you that do not know, and I've said this on many times before, Johnny Ringo was the lead investigator for the late Coney Davis, who has a wealth of knowledge regarding Title 18 and its actual lack of existence in law, and that when an event that we're anticipating occurs, and there is a tremendous amount of sizzle happening right now that this event is occurring now, Johnny Ringo will become part of our team here, either here in Florida or telephonically or by way of Zoom, however. But Johnny Ringo will be making a direct impact on the research that is needed for the team. And we're just very, very pleased that he's agreed to do this. So thank you, Johnny. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2. And otherwise, we're going to call it a night, and that's not really fair because I know you have questions. And while you're thinking about it, I'm going to check Freedom's Radio real quick, refresh that. Nothing there. Nobody raising their hands anyways. Let's see. You've got a good group. And so, Brother John, no other questions have come up, so I want to thank you for joining with us tonight. Remind everyone that tomorrow night I will be presenting for Mr. Slevin, the limited liability company. And, John, you may be very interested in this, but one of your students, actually it's Nicholas's dad, discovered that the workaround on the January 1st ruling regarding limited liability companies having to share additional information that otherwise historically has been private and unaccessible is indeed has one exemption, and that is the 508C entities, Justice Breshear's trusts. So we're gearing up on that. I want to thank everyone. John, do you have any closing comments before we leave?
Once again, may I just humbly and respectfully submit that it's an honor and a privilege to serve beside each and every one of you in the effort to restore liberty to America. And thank you for the privilege of allowing me to serve beside you. The Most High Kings, may he make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you and be your protectors, your provider, and the lifter of your heads. Thank you. Good evening.
I think I read that in the Book of Numbers somewhere.
Yeah, imagine that.
In the Hebrew, and just as a side note, in the Hebrew, Yevalechaka Yehua v'yishmareka, Yeher Yehua panei v'lecha v'ikuneka. Yisa Yehua panei v'lecha v'yasemlecha shalom, which is the Aaronic benediction in Hebrew. Until then, good night, everyone. And be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.